And try and do it without crying. Bodhi Leela and I have, well, we've known each other since somewhere along the early, in mid 2006, 7, 8, somewhere in there. And Bodhi Leela was ordained in 2010. I'm not good with dates sometimes. And she came along here, and she was remote that we were based at London Buddhist Center, and she came along, and not so long after that, end of 2011, volunteered here, and then started working here 2012, and then became chair here 5 years later, 2017, mm-hmm. right, until this spring, and has brought so much of her, I guess I'm, because Bodhi Leela worked, she's a professional musician, string player, and there's something about the strings and how you connect people. It's like you're bringing in a virtual Indra's net in the way you've helped develop Sangha so strongly here at Westland in terms of befriending so many people, bringing people in. She wooed me, and lots of people she's brought in. Through friendship, through inspiration of studying the Dharma, of people speaking and practicing in their authentic way. And you've really provided my mind and my experience such a context for that. And not only were you the first woman chair here, but at West London, but also a person of color chair. And that's so important for all of us to see the inclusivity, the breadth and depth of our Sangha. And that has been something that's been an inspiration for a lot of my friends and also for me personally. Without going on too much longer, I would say Bodhi Leela, some of you probably know, if not most of you, stepped down from chair this spring, and she had a diagnosis of cancer and then underwent treatment. And my partner and I had the great, also great good fortune of being able to be with her, help look after her after that, which has been another way of really deepening our connection and friendship. So over to you, Bodhi Leela. And
thank you very much, Maitri Pushpa. And yeah, it's a real pleasure to see so many familiar faces and friends and yeah, a few new ones. And it feels like really important to be doing a handover. I think endings and beginnings have a lot of significance in our lives, and sometimes we do them without noting them and the significance of them. And there's something about collectively doing it and having it witnessed that I think is important. I think it's important, well, certainly it's important for me, and I'm sure it's important to Amitabha, but I also think it's important for the Sangha to witness that. And it seems to me that it's very auspicious for it to be happening in the context of a Sangha day, quite a late Sangha day, I think, but yes. Because the centre is nothing without the Sangha. You know, and you can't operate as a chair, you know, by yourself. You know, it's, you know, doing it with the Sangha. And in a way, a lot of it is all about, you know, trying to create positive conditions where a Sangha can flourish and grow. When I became chair, I didn't really have a clue what being a chair was. I'd seen like Haramandana's version of it, but I hadn't seen it, and some people at the LBC, and everyone did it differently. And there's a whole lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes. You see somebody up front, and maybe they give a talk, or maybe they're being friendly, or maybe they're officiating a mitra ceremony, or, you know. But actually, there's so much that's involved in the role of being chair that I kind of was learning on the job and discovering and growing into. So, yeah, it's an opportunity for me just now to sort of think back on some of that and reflect on my personal journey. But again, it's like you can't really separate one's personal practice from one's practice within the Sangha. And the whole thing about when one takes on roles of responsibility, it's not quite like in the main world where you're doing a job, where you've got, you know, something that you're responsible for, and then you can go home and that's it. You know, it's part of your practice, you know, and it's an expression of your ideals and your spiritual practice. And it's also a real opportunity for you to deepen your practice. I'll say a bit more about that. Yes. Yeah, so it just feels like, a real pleasure to be doing this on Sangha Day. And I'm very mindful of the fact that when I first came across Tree Ratna and Buddhism, I was somebody who was terrified of people and groups and organizations. And if someone said hello to me, I'd freak out, you know. And, you know, so I liked the meditation, but I went away and did it at home. Came in, did it at home. And then I went on the odd retreat, and that was terrifying, but also very deep. And at some point, I kind of started coming along to the LBC. And then when I heard the actual Dharma, that was like, whoa. Just like in all the suttas, when all the people have the Buddha give them the teachings, it's like this revelatory experience, you know, seeing when it's been dark, something that's been knocked over, now being put upright, and then seeing the path when we're lost. And it was just, I could feel it in my body, you know, my energy and everything, you know. And I've always had a very strong response to the Dharma ever since. And that's been like the heart of, I suppose, my path and my journey. And then along the way, getting acquainted with the Buddha and the archetypal Buddha and the Bodhisattvas, and that inspiration of all the qualities that they embody and all the qualities we have within us, you know, the seeds of which we can develop along the way. And so I found it, you know, very easy to relate to, be inspired by the Dharma and by the Buddha. And all these people were talking about going for refuge, whatever that meant, and going for refuge to the three jewels, whatever that meant. And then I was sort of trying to unpack that over time. And, you know, and then I kind of thought, okay, I can understand going for refuge to the Dharma, going for refuge to the Buddha, but, you know, I didn't really want to engage with the Sangha. And I also didn't see how I could go to refuge for the Sangha, because, you know, obviously some of them were a little bit more together than me and more spiritually advanced than me, but they were still just like people and flawed, and me in my mindset at that time was always looking out for why it wasn't safe or why someone couldn't be trusted, and finding fault and criticism as a way of separating myself from the Sangha. So it actually took me quite a long time to connect with Sangha and to understand Sangha and to value Sangha. But since then, it's sort of been like so much the core of everything for me. I think, and yes, with my current situation of having had to take time off quite suddenly, and then in a way, like my whole life, I've been centered around the center and the Sangha, and then suddenly I'm not. And I've just been amazed at how much the Sangha has been present for me. Both the West London Sangha and the wider Sangha, and the kindness and care and attention, and how important that is. You know, and people doing meditations and pujas for me, or sending cards or little gifts and things. But also amazing acts of generosity, like Norman and Maitri Pushpa, you know, putting me up for 9 weeks after I'd had major surgery because I couldn't do anything for myself. I mean, how many people do that, you know? And they even gave up their bedroom so that I could be there, because I couldn't get into the futon that was in the spare room because of the surgery that I'd had. So yeah, there's been so much generosity that I feel very grateful for. And I know that having the Dharma gave me a context and a way to practice with what my situation was, that made it much, much more easy to deal with, I think. I mean, it's not easy to deal with. But without that, I think I would have been in a lot of very negative mental states, and I'd have found it very hard, you know, I mean, having spent all this time, you know, where you're thinking about impermanence, for instance, you've got a context for something like that. And when it comes down to it, I think a lot of practice is just about, you know, metta and mindfulness, you know, being aware, being kind, and then there's also trying to develop more insight and more awareness of your conditioning and views and, you know, your patterns. And there's nothing like some situation like, you know, life-threatening disease and major surgery and chemo and all the other things alongside it to bring you up against all those things. And the Dharma really helped me through that, and the Sangha as well. So I think I've got an even deeper appreciation of Sangha than I had previously from all the care that I've been experiencing in that way. So I noticed on the list of what's happening that my talk has a title about taking responsibility. And I thought that was interesting, actually, because I've never really thought of myself as taking responsibility. But of course, that is, well, I mean, I suppose I have. But I didn't at the time. But I also realised that it would be a position of responsibility, a position potentially of power. Those are all things that I had avoided as much as I could in my life up until then. Paramananda, when he was thinking of stepping down as chair, he saw something in me. He thought that I would make, you know, a good chair. And he asked me, and I kept on saying no, because I just really didn't want to, and I didn't see myself as being able to do it. And there were other people, you know, at the centre, and other order members who had been at the centre longer, who were more experienced and had a lot of other skills. But at a certain point when he really was going to, and we had this really long talk, and I just thought, actually, okay. Because I could see that the centre needed a chair, and I could see that I had something that I could bring. You know, there were a lot of things that were, felt like, oh, I don't know how I managed that at all, but I also thought I had something I could bring. And I think I had a sort of more of a spiritual vision. I found actually Dharma helped me get over myself, you know, when I first came along, and I was, you know, scared of talking in public or leading anything in public. But my love of the Dharma, my love of wanting to communicate the Dharma with others and share it with others, that helped me get over that. And, you know, however imperfect I might be, you know, I had so much faith in the Dharma that I thought, even I can't wreck the Dharma. You know, I just have to get it out there for other people and then they can respond. So it's a little bit like that with becoming chair. I think the things that mainly inspired me were the idea of sharing the gift of the Dharma, building Sangha, and creating positive conditions for practice for myself and for others. You know, and what is positive conditions? That's hard to say. You know, and some of it can be things that are challenging. Like, I think these last few months have actually been very positive for my practice, even though they've not been very enjoyable. Yeah. And lots of things that in my life at the time I thought, oh, this is a complete disaster, and was feeling like poor me or whatever, have actually been catalysts for really positive change. You know, there's a sense, you know, within Tremant, and I think that came from Sanghavachita, that being in an intense situation, you know, is a real opportunity to develop your practice, to develop insight. And you know, some of the sort of situations that people have been encouraged to be in, like living in community with each other, that definitely can be very intense. I've lived in, well, two communities, one of which was a complete disaster, and one of which was, some of it was very challenging and some of it was amazing. You know, and I do very much believe in community as practice, because, you know, I could see myself and all the other people in it growing and developing in lots of different ways. And it's the same with, like, the idea of what we call team-based livelihoods, you know, that coming together as a team in a spiritual context, in a Buddhist context, which, you know, running a center is one of those sorts of situations. You know, you come across against each other on the team, against the world, against anger, all sorts of things that you couldn't possibly anticipate, you know. Like, who would have anticipated the mains leak down here, and then both showrooms being out of action, and the centre having to be closed, you know, and, you know, because of, you know, what's happened with Thames Water. There's always change, and part of the role is sort of being able to be with that change and try and find your way through it, and try and, in a way, hold the space and, you know, work with others to create those conditions. But yeah, when I first became chair, I really didn't know, I think, the deeper levels of it. You know, I could see that was, you know, it's a kind of funny thing if you're a chair of a Tree Retina Centre, because on the one hand, you're sort of supposed to be there as a sort of like spiritual leader and an inspiration and embodying things and befriending people and the Sangha and teaching and things like that. And on the other hand, you're on a very practical level on the day-to-day running of the centre, you know, which may involve cleaning the loos and, you know, planning practical things for the centre, but also programming and events and all that kind of stuff. And you may involve, you know, finances, and you're legally responsible because you're also chair of the trustees. So it's a kind of difficult thing to straddle. And I think everybody has their own way of being chair, and there are things that are strengths and weaknesses for each, you know. And I was very aware that I didn't have a lot of the skills and experience for some of that. But I was just doing the best I could. And I think what I did is I thought, well, what I can do is I think I can build Sangha, and I think I can communicate the Dharma. And I was very, you know, at the time when I became chair, West London was a little bit apart from the mainstream of Tree Ratna. So part of it was like trying to get us back in contact and in communication and making sure that we actually were a Tree Ratna Centre because it's interesting that the path is very, we've all got our individual path, and I always have a sort of tension between institutional and being individual and free kind of thing. But the whole thing about a centre is you're creating a situation where people can come together to practice, can come into contact with the Dharma, can create community. And for those that want to go deeper, you know, in a Tree Ratna Centre, we want to give those opportunities to maybe become mitras, to become ordained. As well as for me, it was very important that we were part of the community and that anybody could come and feel welcome, you know, even if they didn't identify as a Buddhist, you know, and wanting it to reflect, you know, the different kinds of people around. So when I became chair, I suppose the things that I most enjoyed, and still right up until I stopped being chair, were the teaching and the connections with people. And practicing together and doing retreats together or whatever. But also I really enjoyed that whole process of working alongside other people on teams, you know, so that you have lots of teams happening when you're at a Buddhist center, you know, so, you know, on one level you might have like the trustees, and you might have the center team in terms of the people who are actually employed by the center. And we've always had quite a small centre team, but we've also, you know, you have all the teams of people who are volunteering, some of whom are doing loads and loads of hours and taking on masses of responsibility. You know, so like at the moment we have the leadership team, which might be Pushpa and Amalavadra and members, and also Amlanadi and Viryanaga. So when I had to step down at very short notice, I literally got the diagnosis of my cancer and then planned for major surgery within a month. I needed to make sure that there were people who could take on that spiritual responsibility and the practical responsibility. And, you know, it was amazing that we got such a team of fantastic people to do that. who could also work together as a team, you know. But along the way, there have been so many different teams as people have come and joined the centre and left the centre, and then all the teams for this class or this event or this retreat. And I think a lot of my friendships have developed on teams, doing things with people. I think that's one of the things with Sangha. There's a sort of companionship and shared vision and shared practice together that can be really, really deep. You know, you may be close friends with a few people, but you may not get on with other people, but you can still have that sense of being a team, of being a Sangha, and, you know, creating something important together. Because we all are flawed and we all are practicing, and we've all got our own different sets of conditions, all got our different views, which can cause a lot of conflict at times. But part of the job of chair, I think, is trying to bring people together and trying to create a bit more harmony. When I started, there was a lack of harmony, I would say, amongst the team and the order members around here, with the various people not talking to each other, things like that, Richard. I must say, it's been really lovely over the time just seeing how many people have joined the Sangha or come back to the Sangha, come and practiced, developed friendships, developed connections with each other, gone on with their own lives. Because really, as chair, all you can do is try and create conditions, you know, and see what happens. You can try and do all you can and get other people to help, and it's always a shared enterprise, you know, it's not just you. But obviously, we're all individuals, so who we are will shape the kind of chair we are, the kind of emphasis we have, the values that we have, you know, and that changes as different chairs come in, and I think that keeps the centre alive, keeps it growing. So there's all, you know, there are a few documents out there about what is a centre chair, what is a Tree Ratna chair, what are the qualities a chair should have, what are the things you should be doing, and it's just so long, and nobody could possibly do all of them. And there's actually one saying, this is just things that you could be. You know, we're not expecting you to be all of these things. But of course, you do feel a little bit like, well, I should be doing this and I should be doing that. No, dear. but I think what it comes down to is practice and shared practice, you know, and that love of the Dharma and the three jewels and how we can help each other to grow and develop along the way. There's one thing that I did very much appreciate when I became chair was the opportunity to go on the European Chairs Assembly meetings, which are like week-long residentials, mostly done at Astana, though we have had them at Padmalokam and Vajrasana in the past, where chairs of the European, mainland Europe and Britain, the UK, come together, and it's not quite a retreat, but you do some meditations and some evening rituals and things, but there's also a lot about sharing what it is to be a chair, and there's a program planned, and you'll have people coming in giving talks from all different aspects, and you also get a real sense of the wider Tree Ratna, you know, which I hadn't had a clue. Well, I mean, I knew there were different centres, I knew there were retreat centres, but I wasn't really aware of all these different organisations. And, well, I knew that the Preceptors College, you know, the public preceptors belonged to that, who ordained people, but I didn't really have that much contact with them or understand so much of their role. And then there's all the different charities within Tree Ratna that are there, and the International Council, which took me ages to get my head around what that was, because actually, you know, we're just a small part of Tree Ratna. And there are, you know, all around the world, people in Tree Ratna, and there's a sort of body that comes together with them. So it was very inspiring, actually, to see that whole network of Sangha extending beyond the centre, and also seeing how important the work we did, and being very, very moved and very inspired by those other people who were taking on responsibility in those roles as directors of charity, as chairs. Everyone doing it differently, and there's such a range of centres, some tiny little centres, some enormous centres like the LBC, And yet we're all doing the same thing in a way. And trying to create those conditions for people, you know, so that was a real benefit for me in growing and seeing and realizing that we could have an impact, you know, on the wider movement and the world, as well as our own individual centers. And as chair of a center, I could also have an influence on all the other chairs, and they could have an influence on me, and what happened at our centers. Yeah, so certain initiatives like the more recent people of color. I mean, there's been activities happening for people of color for a while, but I don't know, about 5 or 6 years ago, I think it was 6 years ago, Suryagupta became chair of the London Buddhist Centre, and then we both talked on one of those meetings about, well, this is a opportunity for us to come together. We're both chairs of London centres, we both had experience, and how can we create conditions to support more people of colour coming to the movement, practising, becoming mitras, becoming order members, and out of that has grown, you know, a real community there, not separate from the wider Trimat community, but part of it. You know, because I can remember for years when I came along to any events, usually being the only people, person of colour, or maybe there might be one other, you know. And yet in these last few years, we've been at Vajrasana regularly, having 60 people on our retreats, and we've had a couple of retreats at Adistana, where we had like over 70 or 80 people. I mean, more than that, actually, yeah. So it's been, yeah. You just do little bits and see what happens. So I think for me, although at the beginning it was very challenging, and I came chair earlier than I thought I would be, because once I said I would do it, and we thought, well, since I'm not so experienced and people might want to, you know, might not want me to just sort of take over as chair, we worked out this plan where I was going to have a year sort of shadowing Paramananda there, and then when I became chair, he would be there as a support for me. And we put in this proposal, and I went off on a 2-week solitary, and I came back, and everybody had decided they wanted me to become chair, and become chair sort of in the next month or so, without Paramananda doing any of that. So that was a little bit of a, oh, okay. And then it just so happened that around the time that I became chair, there was a whole documentary bringing up some of the, you know, the unskillful stuff of Triratna's past that had a very big impact on the Sangha, and I would say especially on the Order Sangha, actually, and the team and the trustees, and a lot of people, you know, really doubting their situation. And it was quite, you know, for me coming in as a very inexperienced chair, having that situation, it was quite hard to deal with, but we get through it. And then you never know what's going to come up. So, like, I came across a whole load of these that for some reason I had at my home, which are sort of old programs. So, like, after a couple of years, had really built up the program, and there's all this stuff happening. There's arts events, there's whole page on Buddhism, meditation, social stuff. And it was feeling really vibrant. Some of you will have been around at that time and doing all that. And then COVID happened. And I don't know if the centre's ever completely got back to where it was since then. And it was a major blow, actually, you know. And very sudden, very unexpected. And we could just sort of, I remember being here with some of the other team members, and then, you know, supposed to be day off, but we all came in and we talked about it, and we thought, we're going to have to close the centre, you know, we're going to have to let people know. And then wondering, well, will there be a centre? If the centre's closed, what will happen? You know, how can we be there for the Sangha? You know, how will we survive? You know, and also financially, because, you know, I think in that year we lost about 80% of our income because of the centre being closed, not being able to run. I remember we had a full retreat that was supposed to happen, you know, the weekend after, that we had to refund, and all these courses and things had to refund, and yeah. But it was amazing, again, how the Sangha came together, how they responded, you know. I think we realised that we would need to do something online, you know, and there was various like, I'm not sure about that or whatever, but we decided let's give it a go. You know, I didn't know what it would be like to do an online retreat. What is an online retreat? But I thought, well, let's see if we can find some kind of equivalent where people can do that. And I remember at that time there was all this furloughing and they were saying that, you know, you weren't allowed to work, you know, and the whole team, including me, got furloughed. I thought, well, we don't know how long this is going to last, but we can't all just be sitting around here at home not doing anything. So we did, you know, there were a few, I think about a week you could work each month or something. And we could stagger it and do it different things, but we did put on a program, you know, and I did ask the trustees, look, can I be unfurloughed for a month? I know it means you have to pay me and we're not earning any income, but can we just see what happens? You know, and then that we did, Paramahansa and I did our first week-long meditation retreat. I did an intro meditation course, an intro Buddhism course, and a couple of weekly lunchtime drop-ins, and we got people coming along, you know, and from that, I think we had a really rich online program with a rolling program of beginners courses, but also a rolling program going deeper courses, and we'd do festival days, and we'd do retreats, week-long retreats or weekend retreats. And we got people from the wider Sangha coming into us as well. But it was one way that we managed to stay together. I mean, I know some people really didn't like online and didn't come to any of those events. But for some people, it was a real way of keeping our Sangha together. And we come through it. I mean, I think that's quite an achievement that we came through it. Mm-hmm. You know, it took ages for people to start coming back. And there's still people probably now who haven't yet come back. But it does feel like, you know, the centre is, again, vibrant and people are here and it's a meaningful place for practice. And, yeah, I really love the West London Centre. There's something, every centre's got its own little ethos, its own kind of feeling about it. And this has always had an emphasis on practice, particularly meditation practice, but devotional practice as well. Really miss Tara Kurunya, who... That was one of the things that we shared, a deep love of ritual and devotional practice. And I think she was an amazing practitioner. And anyone who came to one of her pujas, it was like nothing else. And even if you've never been to a puja before, or even if you're very resistant to them, she would just get you totally into it, you know. So it's a delight, actually, to be here in the shrine room. And meditating together with people, I think I no longer take that for granted, you know. Partly COVID, all those months when we were not able to meditate in the same room with each other. And then for me personally, this last few months when I haven't been coming to the centre. So it's, you know, it's a real delight, real privilege to actually be able to meditate with you all, to actually be able to sit with you all, talk to you. And I know that we're going to be doing a threefold puja now. I'm not sure if I'll have the energy to be here for the whole day, but if I am, then there's a sevenfold puja, which is wicked, you know. Yeah. So I know I'm just rambling a little bit, but yes, I guess I feel that I've grown a lot as a person. I've had to learn skills, but I've also had to deal with a lot of my views about myself, my views about others and about life. I've had to work with communication, work with my fears a lot, you know, and try and develop some of the skills, which some of which I never did develop, but some I did, to help run the centre and things. And it's very much been like building a network of friendship, building the Sangha, connecting with the Sangha. I mean, one way that people sometimes talk about being chair is about being a Kalyana Mitra, a spiritual friend to the community. And that's always inspired me a lot. I mean, you can't feel like you're a deep spiritual friend to every single person on a one-to-one basis, but you can feel that connection with everybody through our shared spiritual values and practice. And it's been really inspiring seeing other people, how they've grown and developed, and other people coming together as a Sangha. And Yeah, being very deeply moved by people volunteering, actually. When I first started coming, well, volunteering and then working at the centre, we weren't at this centre, we were at the place down the road, which was a house, and we'd got temporary permission to use the basement and ground floor as the Buddhist centre. If you had, well, 25 people in the shrine room, it was very cosy. And you could hear everything. Anywhere in the building, you could hear everything. Plus, the shrine room was right next door to a kitchen that certain people would come into and decide to clutter around and cook while you might be having a meditation happening. But why am I saying that? I've completely lost my train of thought. But there's something about.
Volunteers.
Yeah, oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, well, when I first came to the centre, we had one volunteer, and that remained the case for a long time. And then we maybe got to two or three volunteers, So it says something about the fact that I know we have so many people here who volunteer now. And some people are doing it on a regular basis, maybe they've got a regular slot on reception, or maybe help with the cleaning, or maybe they're on one of the teams, or maybe they've got a particular skill they might share. Or maybe they might not have the capacity in their life to be able to do anything ongoingly, but they might say, oh, there's a festival there, I'll help with that, or there's a retreat, I'll help with that. Or when I was preparing for my operation, I knew that I needed to just sort of pass on as much as I could to everybody. And with the leadership team, who are all volunteers, at that point, though, yeah, sorry, I'm using my train of thought again. This is one of the things about having chemo, it gives you this sort of brain fog and it's hard to remember or follow things through. But yeah, so actually, technically speaking, Amalavajra was. Became our men's mitra convener, so he was being part time, and Viryanaga, he was being a consultant, he was getting some pay, but they gave so much more of their time than that. And I've been so lucky actually with the people who've been supporting me and helping me to, keep the centre going, run the centre, deal with various crises. And who also have been inspiring in terms of their practice and who they are, and really good friends. But yes, yeah, so I had to sort of like think, well, these people have agreed to be the leadership team, which was amazing because I don't know what would happen if they hadn't. And then we had the team, which at that point was me, Andy, who'd recently become on board, doing 3 days a week, and just before I'd. Recruited Alex to do 1 day a week, and I'd, Maitri Pushpa and I had interviewed Amalavajra to come into the role of men's mitra convener for like 3 days a week. And then there were all these other things that needed to be done, and a lot of that was done by volunteers. And I wrote in the list, well, these people can volunteer with this, and this person will take on this, and these people are doing this, helping support this class, and these people are. Volunteer teaching. And yeah, it was very moving actually how many people were willing to volunteer and I think have really stepped up in this time. And I think that's part of the words. They have meanings, don't they? You have to get the right word. Yeah, well, anyway, you need volunteers. So yes. Yes. Anyway, yes, I am going to stop. Any minute. So yes, I suppose I just wanted to say a big thank you to everybody along the way who's, while I've been chair, helped build and support this community and this centre, and by your practice or by volunteering, by coming and working here, and especially actually to Amalavajra. It's a very odd situation for me to be in that, like with Andy and then not Alex, I think he came in for 2 days' work before I had to go off sick. Amalavajra did the interview, and then literally I went into hospital 2 days before he started. you know, and I spent 3 years wooing Subhadasi as president. And then we'd planned this whole thing on Buddha Day for him to take over, and then I was in hospital. Yes. But it's great because they're all fantastic, and it's made it easier for me to step down knowing that there's these fantastic people in place. But I suppose what I wanted to particularly thank Emily Vajra, because it's a big thing to take on being chair. You know, when we did the interview, and I knew that I was, you know, looking for someone to succeed, and I could see that he had the skills, experience and qualities to make a good chair. So I said, well, you know, take on Mitchell, but, you know, in a certain amount of time, I might step down and might you consider. And he was very like, no way. No. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an incredible act of generosity to take on, you know, a role like this, and particularly at a time when the centre's going through difficulties in lots of different ways. And you can see it's, you know, it's going to be a big journey, you know. You don't get much pay for it, you know, and you get a lot of flack sometimes because everybody has all these expectations and all these projections onto you. And you're just doing the best you can. But I feel, you know, he's taken it on and he's willing to commit to it for a substantial amount of time, which is what you need because, you know, take 2 or 3 years to actually understand how to become a chair, what it actually means and to get things in place. You know, in the olden days, there were people who did it for a lot longer, I think. And it wasn't unusual for people to be chairs for 10 years. And what I've noticed in my time as a chair is, especially at the European chairs meetings, is that there are a lot of people who will just be chair for 2 or 3 years and then step down. And it's like, what can you get done in 2 or 3 years, really? Some people even step down after a year, you know. So the fact that he's sort of seen the lay of the land and what it entails and is willing to take it on is amazing. You know. And you know. You know. And I think it's generous because I think being chair is an act of service, you know, serving the Sangha, serving the Dharma. And it's quite rare for people to take on that kind of a role. And I think we're very fortunate to have somebody of Emily Vajra's caliber and with his personal qualities as well to take on that role. So it's making it a lot easier for me to just step away. I thought I would want to get all these things in place before I step down. I haven't. But what I would say is that I have maybe, in terms of what were my key things I wanted to, I have been creating conditions for people to practice, have been sharing the gift of the Dharma, and have been building Sangha. You know, there's more of it to come, and I'm passing it on to Emily Vajra, who I'm sure will take the centre to new heights in the future. Thank you. Yeah.
Few offerings from the Sangha devotee.